Great to be here with you on a Friday night into Saturday morning, sitting in for George Norrie. And if you want to find out more about his internet television program, Beyond Belief, just head on up to the website, coasttocoastam.com, and just click on the link there on the homepage, and you can find out how to subscribe. In the meantime, our webmaster, Sean Latasseur, has posted some great stories in the news section, including results of the largest ever genetic study of a single population, which could help refine dates for major events during human evolution. The article published in The Guardian is entitled, Study Shows Humans Are Evolving Faster Than Previously Thought. We came back from the break with Sly and the Family Stone, If You Want Me to Stay. And Sly Stone, I just think, is an absolute genius, underappreciated. I believe celebrated his 72nd birthday recently. And the last I heard, Sly Stone was essentially homeless, living in a van somewhere in Los Angeles, looking for confirmation on that. But that's a sad story, if true. All right, we will be back with Open Lines. Can't wait to dive into the phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie, and we're floating the hashtag RichardC2C. Richard, C as in coast, the number two, C as in coast. Richard, hashtag RichardC2C. Matthew tweets, yeah, y'all think the previous civilizations were onto something, moon being a goddess and Mars being a god, question mark. All right, let's go to the phones, and we'll begin with the wild card line. Bill is in West Hartford, Connecticut. Good morning, Bill. Welcome to Coast. How are you?
It's good, thank you, Richard. Hi, hi. I want to ask you, give you my thought and question, the same thing that I wanted to ask the other Richard, Richard C. Hoagland, last hour, but I couldn't. So I'll ask you. Regarding the space program, regarding what Richard talked about, the new age of space, the second age of space, I'm thinking in terms of the next manned American space flight, or at least manned in the sense that it can carry astronauts. That's Project Orion. As you know, this past December, 3 months ago, was the first unmanned test, Earth orbit test of Orion, two orbit mission around the Earth, and it was totally successful, 101% successful. Well, my thought was the next mission with Orion, added to the brand new huge rocket, SLS, Space Launch System rocket, that is scheduled for early 2018, 3 years from now. Not only do I think it should be manned instead of unmanned as is planned as of now, as I mentioned to Richard a couple of months ago, last time he was on Coast, but the point I wanted to ask Richard tonight, and I'll ask you, for the sake of world peace, considering what's going on in Ukraine, especially right now, fears of World War III with Russia, to cement ties with the United States and Russia, as well as to cement more ties in space between the United States and Russia, as we've been doing for the past 15 years with the ISS, the International Space Station. Like today, there was the mission, you know, with Scott Kelly going into space with another Russian cosmonaut and a third Russian cosmonaut. The two people, the American astronaut, the Russian cosmonaut, will stay in the ISS for a whole year. My point is, could in 2018, that unmanned Orion SLS mission be manned with two American astronauts and two Russian cosmonauts, because it can hold four people all together? Why not have two Americans and two Russians go together and have sort of an Apollo 8 of the 21st century where they orbit the moon without landing with two Americans and two Russians 3 years from now? They could start the training right now. President Obama could announce it soon this year, 2015, and that would still bring the world together, thinking that in just 3 years, America and Russia will go to the moon together. What do you think of this?
Well, I think it's pie in the sky. What I look at happening down here, I think we're headed in, we're already in the midst of another Cold War. And in many ways, I think we are already in an undeclared World War III. I know that sounds bizarre or a little harsh.
And scary, that's what I'm saying. What I just said, could that turn that around? If right away President Obama says we're going to go as soon as we can, which is maybe late 2017, early 2018, with the Orion spacecraft that is compatible with humans. This second Orion mission could have people in there survive. It'll be have environmental controls and all of that. So why not two American astronauts and the other two be two Russian cosmonauts?
I would love to see that, Bill, and you would as well. I think we all would. But the current tensions out there, Vladimir Putin, I don't think wants anything to do with Barack Obama. I don't think he trusts him. I think that the distrust is mutual, and I can't think of a time when tensions have been this high. You know, we'd have to go back to the. Even the early days of the Cold War, like to the Cuban Missile Crisis, this type of situation, that's where we're headed.
Well, so, today Scott Kelly went up with two Russians to the ISS in Earth orbit, and they're going to stay for a year, and we've been doing it that with the Russians for the last 15 years, till about the year 2000 or 1998. So going out to the moon is even more dramatic and spectacular. We could do that. If we can go to Earth orbit with Russia, we can go to the moon to orbit it and eventually land with Russians to the moon.
Yeah,
together.
I just think that would I just think that would take such a huge commitment beyond what they're doing right now. But Bill, you know, let's hold on to that. Let's hope for that. That would certainly be a harbinger of better relations and so forth. But I wish I could be more positive about it. I just think we're heading into some pretty turbulent waters right now. Let's go to wild card line again. And Travis is it Mayaca, Florida? Travis, did I pronounce that right?
Yes, you did, sir.
Mayaca, whereabouts is that in Florida?
It's a little east of Tampa, a little to the south.
All right, Travis, where do you want to take us?
Sir, I'd just like to know where you are thinking on the whole thing of there's more out in the universe than there is that all the scientists say, you know, we might find some kind of something on, you know, this planet or whatever, but honestly, I don't think we can, you know, say that. There's so much out there. I just want to know your opinion on it.
Are you asking me my thoughts on life elsewhere in the universe?
Yes.
Intelligent life.
Life. Yeah.
Well,
because we can't be the only thing here, you know?
Why not? Why not? I'll be honest with you. I'm going to lay my cards on the table. I come at this from, I'm a Christian. And, you know, that may come as a, you know, it's not a very popular thing to say these days. And I happen to believe in the Bible, for better or worse. I think that we exist in a real sweet spot in the universe. When you look at the cosmic radiation and asteroid belts and things like that, not only are we in a sweet spot in the Milky Way, we are in a sweet spot in our solar system. And why is it, you know, inconceivable to think that we are, in fact, alone? If we are not alone, you know, where are they? I mean, I know we've had 150 million sightings of UFOs since 1947, according to a UN report. Who's to say what they are? Maybe they're from another dimension. Maybe they're not extraterrestrial. I happen to believe they're interdimensional. Maybe they're from an angelic or a demonic realm. So in terms of... Go ahead.
I'm sorry. It could be, sir. I've been trying to disguise my voice a little bit. I'm Travis from... Yeah. And it could be that there is so much out there that we know nothing of anything. We are just children learning to walk.
Well, I certainly believe that. That's true. We are children. But as to your question,
I think of us as we're children. We got training wheels. They're flying fighter jets. We got, you know, they're doing all this stuff, but we got training wheels, and we're going. I think I can move the pedal a little bit. You know what I'm saying? That's how I take it. I'd like to say I love your website. Very good. And I love Coast to Coast, and I'm a big fan.
Appreciate it, Travis. Thanks for checking in from Mayaca, Florida. All right, we are going to the wild card line again, and this time it's Mark in Branson, Ontario?
Brampton, Ontario.
Brampton. I should know that. You're just down the road from where I'm perched. Mark, welcome to Coast. Good morning. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you, Richard?
Very well, thank you.
Hi. What I wanted to talk to you about and ask you about, you said you're a Christian. That's pretty amazing. So I was wondering what your thoughts are on geocentrism, and I was wondering if you think that NASA's blue marble picture taken in 1972 by the Apollo 17, if that's a little slip or, you know, a little leak of evidence, that because there's no blurred lines in that picture. It's almost like evidence that the Earth does not move.
You're asking me, well, no, I mean, I believe that the Earth orbits the sun, and
really?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
How do you explain the blue marble picture then? Because there's no blurred lines in it at all.
No blurred lines in it. I don't know how to explain that. I'm, you know, I'm not a scientist from NASA.
It's mapped at a distance of 45,000 kilometers from Earth, and there's no blurred lines in it. You can perfectly see the crisp-cut lines of Africa, like it's evidence that the Earth doesn't move.
Is it? Is that what it means? I'm not so sure.
That's what I see. I know, that's what I'm asking you. Because you said you believe in the authenticity of the Bible, and there's many verses in the Bible that says, like Psalm 93:1, the Earth is stationary and fixed, not moving.
Well, I'd have to go back and revisit Psalms. I say I'm a Christian, maybe not a very good one. Maybe I need to study my Bible a little more closely. So where is that chapter again?
Psalm 93:1, Psalm 96:10, Psalm 104:5, I think. Yeah, 104:5. They all say the same thing. The Earth is fixed and not moving.
Then, well, that's a new one on me.
Have you heard of Dr. Robert Sun Genius?
I have not.
Oh, yeah. I stumbled upon this. I was just doing research, studying different things, and I stumbled upon this, and I found that there's actually a lot of viable evidence that supports geocentrism. Like, you think of the Earth, the Sun, and the Moon like a cosmic-sized Tesla coil. Like, the Earth is the stationary coil and stationary core, and the Sun is the moving charge, and the Moon is the stabilizer.
Okay.
That's more evidence for it.
Well, maybe we need to do a show on that. Although some might say, well, if you're going to talk about that, why not talk about a flat Earth? Do you believe in a flat Earth?
No, I don't believe in a flat Earth. I believe because the picture shows that you can clearly see that the Earth is a ball. But I'm just thinking, like, because of the EM field, because, you know, EM field is stronger than gravity, and because Earth is lined up, this would explain the inner workings of the Earth. The inner workings of the Earth is like a gyroscopic system all the way down to the, now they've discovered just 2 months ago, inner core.
All right. Well, Mark, now you've got me curious, and I'm going to go back and delve into the Bible and Psalms and take a look at that.
When I stumbled upon it, and it's like, wow.
Mark, I appreciate your call. Thank you for that. All right, let's go back to the wild card line. Thomas is in La Jolla, California. Oh, we lost Thomas. All right, east of the Rockies, Britt is in Garland, Texas. Hello, Britt. Good morning. Welcome to Coast. How are you?
I'm doing great, Richard. Hey, I have my own little hypothesis about how these, for lack of a better word, ancient astronauts may have constructed, moved around the heavenly bodies of our solar system. It's based on Zachariah Sitchin's book, 12th Planet, where he talks about how they were mining gold in order to powderize it and put it in the atmosphere to protect it. But you know about the white powder of gold version of the platinum group elements, you know, that they're highly energized forms of these metallic atoms that have unusual properties. What if you sprinkled the atmosphere of the planet, or put around in a spherical manner the around the planet you wanted to move this white powder gold, which will when energized, reduce by half approximately the gravitational weight of an object as proven in laboratory experiments. Then if you arranged like sort of like a billiard game, you took a rogue planet and sent it through the solar system, and these arcs of lightning would take place when the planets get close enough together for their space charge sheaths to reach a sort of ability to exchange massive amounts of electrical potential, as talked about in Velikovsky, where he says that, according to mythology, the way he interprets it, that planets exchanged lightning bolts as they passed in the ancient past. And so that would allow, if they were really good about it, and of course they had to be really good, they're smarter than God, and they probably, probably a bad phrase to use, but they probably could have lined up the whole thing and like turn Uranus on its side. You know, they could, you know, move planets to the exact orbit they want them to be. And I just thought I'd float that idea out there and see what somebody else thought about it.
Well, that's a really complicated issue, Britt. My problem with that is, if you have a civilization, and you mentioned Sitchin, and so we're talking about the Anunnaki, and they swing by on Nibiru in this strange orbit that it has, however long it takes to get here, 30,000 years or whatever it is. If they have that capability, and this sort of dialing back to Richard C. Hoagland, they are essentially a level two type civilization. In other words, they have power. They have harnessed the power of the sun. We think of stars as essentially a furnace, right? And these stars produce all of the elements that we have here on Earth and elsewhere in the universe. If they can do that, why do they need to come to Earth to mine gold? I mean, they have the ability, I would think, they would be real alchemists. They'd be able to produce gold by other means. They wouldn't have to come here, create some sort of a primitive human alien hybrid in order to mine the gold and then take it back and use the gold for their atmosphere. That's Sitchin's theory, I guess. That part doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I kind of have an answer for that too.
I'll bet you do.
In our part of the galaxy, that gold is plentiful, and other places it's not. And this seems to be a really unique place because we seem to be constantly visited by people from somewhere else. And also because of the unique play of hyperdimensional, forces and fields that are created by this, huge number of planets we have in our solar system compared to the ones they've seen so far out there, that it could be that we may not be necessarily alone, but we're like the most interesting place in the galaxy, possibly. And we have the most interesting elements in our crust of our planet.
All right, they're here for the gold. I'm a gold bug myself. When is it going to rise above $1,200 an ounce? That's what I want to know. We'll get back to your calls here on Open Lines, Coast to Coast AM. Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie. Stay a while. There she is. The matriarch of R&B, Miss Peaches, as she was known, born Jemzetta Hawkins and widely credited as having bridged the gap between rhythm and blues and rock and roll, and she had 6 Grammys and 17 Blues Music Awards to her credit. That is, of course, Etta James, and Something's Got a Hold of Me. We are trending the hashtag RichardC2C. Richard, C as in coast, 2, the number 2, and C as in coast. Hashtag RichardC2C. And thanks to Moonlink's Diva for this. I was wondering about whatever happened to Sly Stone. We played one of his tracks a little earlier in the program, and I was lamenting the fact that the last I'd heard, Sly Stone was homeless, essentially, living in a van now in his early 70s, somewhere in Los Angeles. But Moonlink's Diva has set me straight. She says that Sly recently won a $5 million judgment against his former manager and lawyer, and so he certainly won't be homeless now. Well, that's good news, if true, and we'll look into that. Thanks, Moonlink's Diva. All right, back to open lines, and we'll do that in just mere moments here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie. The website, richardserrett.com, and you can say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett. Before I get back to the calls, I just want to throw another log on the fire here. I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago when I was on the program last mid-March. 3 weeks ago, had a small fire in our condo here in North Toronto. Kind of a rookie mistake, an unattended pot of wax on the stove. And I had my head down, buried in my work, in my computer, my headset on. Didn't hear the smoke alarm go off. Long story short, in the rush to get this pot out of the condo and out onto the veranda, my wife and I sustained, I would guess, second degree burns, pretty serious burns to our hands. And just weeks prior to that, as luck would have it, I went down to Niagara Falls to visit a gentleman who I've had on my radio show up here, who's a bit of an inventor. He's written a book or a pamphlet about a carburetor that gets 100 miles to the gallon. And in addition to that, he also makes his own colloidal silver. And he mentioned when we went down to pick up a couple of bottles, he said this stuff is great. Just spray, it comes in a spray bottle. You can spray it on cuts and burns, and it'll heal pink eye, junctivitis. Now, he's making this claim. I'm not. We have to be careful about that. Anyway, colloidal silver, it's been around for 1,000 years, and it has all sorts of uses. But he mentioned, you know, that it's good for burns. So after we sustained these burns in the condo, we immediately remembered the colloidal silver. So we ran and we sprayed it on our hands. Yeah, and in fact, we had a big bottle of it. We poured that in another pot, and we soaked our hands in this colloidal silver. Now, over the next couple of days and the next week, both our hands, they looked horrible. I mean, you know, the blisters, as you can imagine, you know, if you've seen someone who's been in a fire. I tell you, we should have been in excruciating pain. I remember having a burn, a slight burn, touching a stove as a child, just the corner of my finger, and you know what it's like. The pain was incredible. And yet, here I had, and my wife had, second-degree burns to our hands, and a little bit of discomfort. My wife had some open sores on her hand because her blisters had popped, not to get too graphic. However, I really can't say that I had any pain whatsoever, and I think it must have been the colloidal silver. Wondering if you've ever had any experience with colloidal silver. Do you use it? What do you use it for? And what experiences have you had? We'll throw that log on the fire as well. And in the meantime, we'll go once again to the wild card line. And Catherine is in New York City, my favorite city. Catherine, good morning and welcome to Coast.
Oh, hey, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. Gosh, I wish it was under better circumstances. I am very proudly and angrily calling from the East Village in New York City. Have you heard what happened?
Are you talking about the building collapse?
The gas explosion.
Yeah, it was a horrible situation.
Collapsed and other damage. I'm two blocks away from it.
Horrible situation.
Disgusting. It's officially a crime scene.
What's happening, Catherine? Can you update us?
A few minutes, I'll tell you. Yes, I will. And I'm not going to, I don't relay gossip. Anything that I say is through, you know, confirmed through official sources. There was a building, these are all like 6-7 story buildings, they're now absolutely rubble. And 12 other buildings are not allowed to be occupied. At least two people are missing. One gentleman was eating in with a sushi restaurant, one of the workers. Basically, what happened is the building owner wanted to install a larger gas pipe service to the building. It had twice been told by our utilities called Con Ed, twice it failed inspection. Now, we got a situation here, which is probably very common, where the licensed, this work is supposed to be done by specially licensed plumbers. Unfortunately, they never have to be on the site. What they do is send, obviously, less than qualified workers or subcontractors to do the actual work, and these license holders just sit in their office and sign off on the paperwork, and the city buildings department finds that acceptable. That's got to change, obviously. But what happened was they wanted to upgrade. They had like an inch and a half pipe going through. They wanted to. They had put in 3-inch pipes, and they were waiting for Con Ed had to put approve it and then do the actual connection to the gas main, which again, twice they said absolutely not. And that's just, to me, stupid. How could a contractor who's supposed to be educated do that work and then have it be so egregiously unacceptable? You know, that. But anyway, Con Ed had been there about 2 o'clock, and they again said, absolutely not, we're not going to connect this, it's not up to code.
But then they did. Then apparently they restored it shortly before the blast.
No, absolutely not. The Con Ed, the utility, never restored it. It was...
The construction workers did.
The mayor, yes, the mayor said it was inappropriately...
Right, the illegal, yes, this was illegal, but the construction workers turned it on again.
Yep.
Yeah, this is...
The owners, they went in there, and they hooked it up anyway, and then the restaurant, I don't know, owner or manager smelled strong gas shortly.
And nobody called 911. Nobody called 911, even though they smelled gas. That's the strange thing.
Well, that implies to me that the restaurant owner or whomever from the restaurant who just called the owner knew that something was fishy that they did not want to alert the authorities to. Because just about a month ago, our utilities sent basically like scratch and sniff postcards to every household and business that said, this is what gas smells like. If you smell it, by the time you smell it, do not second guess yourself. You call emergency immediately, and you're supposed to evacuate before you call, because even pushing the buttons on a phone can spark an explosion like this. There were police department crime scene trucks all over there today. I hope those responsible are arrested and charged with attempted murder. This has got to stop. We had just about a few months ago, thank God, the mayor cracked down on the building department. Payoffs within the building department were just so ubiquitous that I believe it was half of the building inspectors who actually got arrested for taking bribes. And that's what goes on, is that these building owners know that there's no muster behind these rules, these safety laws, and they know that they can skirt them and apparently not care. And this is what happens. My building could have blown up a year ago. The building superintendent, he used to live in the building, and he was moving to one of the other buildings. He ripped out his stove. He wanted to take it with him. He's not supposed to have done the work. He did it. He ripped the stove out. He left the gas line open enough that I smelled gas, and apparently I'm one of the few people who really know what it smells like. I called immediately. And when the Con Ed came, they shut off the utilities to the whole building. They said that an explosion was imminent if the situation had gone on, if the gas had leaked for a couple more hours in my building. The pipes were condemned. They were so old that Con Ed refused to reconnect it. And the building owner fought having to put in new pipes. And when they finally did, they upped our rent because of, you know, having to correct the dangerous situation.
Well, Catherine, thank you for the update. This is a horrific situation, and let's hope, as you say, that those that were negligent, and God forbid, that anyone dies, there are still missing individuals. But if any loss of life has ensued, then let's hope that they bring the hammer down hard on those responsible. Catherine in New York City, I appreciate the update. Let's go to the wild card line again. And is it Clatu in Fountain, Colorado? Colorado. Good morning.
Yes, it is. How you doing, Rich?
I'm well, Clatu.
All right. Thanks, Dino, for letting me on. Am I coming across all right before we go on?
I'm sorry. I didn't catch that.
Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Oh, all right. Great. But again, you know, you got invited at the beginning of the show, open lines and that, you know, someone could call in and basically steer the ship. Well, is that still open? Because have I got a ride for you all?
All right. Take us.
All right. I know it was great tonight, too. And, you know, Mr. Hoagland was on. And he's kind of involved with this. But it's very interesting. He was right. Whether you know it or not, Richard, you're spot on. You're spot on this code talk. What am I talking about? What is Hoagland talking about? What is this code talk he's talking about? Let's go to Brookings. I know this might take a little time, but I want to break it down from what I see and where we're at and this disclosure that's coming forth to which no one can talk about. Goes back to Brookings. Under what circumstances will we be presented or withheld? Think of it as a riddle. Under what circumstances will we be presented or withheld data and or disclosure, information of disclosure? Now, what if that became policy? And he said this to me on my show years ago. But what if that became policy? And to which total suppression, as he said in the past, and also on your show, and possibly with you even, forgive my ignorance there. And, you know, I like you, by the way. You know, I like you. You're spot on with a lot of the things. That's why he's right of what you said. It's like you're following along easily. And then how I see this code speak and what he's really alluding to of our model of the solar system, we have a solar system model, a mathematical problem, an artifact, an alien artifact, with the hint of intelligence being given to us under Brookings now, mind you, under what circumstances will we be presented or withheld data and or disclosure of what they found out there? Like, you're familiar with the S-Files, correct?
Oh, yes, and it's coming back.
All right. The truth is out there. Indeed. What if it's out there, in fact, in things that we've already seen over the years, or may not have seen, obviously, in this case, but to a lot, many people. But maybe now some, thanks to me and the effort behind it, and Hoagland's kicking my behind in some ways to get me to see it, I believe. But we won't get into that. I want to focus on the model of Brookings, which what he was saying alludes exactly to what I found. And he was right at the end when basically someone's saying, hey, it's time. The time to either get it out or someone else is going to do it. Again, that falls back to the hint of Brookings. Under what circumstances will we be presented with data via videos, acclimation? What if all this is an acclimation program leading to which is being discussed on the surface is just a surface, a cover, a circle, a cover story that is coded in ways that can connect over years, even if you follow a script, and to which spells out a scenario. If you see that script and you change that script from the surface for the Type 2 civilization in code, which would mean the undersurface, the story undercover, there's two tracks. Second track diplomacy, Hoagland would say. There's two tracks. One track on the surface, where it's an official story as it was, a cover story. But if you have certain knowledge of key points, like I've learned over the years and that he's helped me to see, mind you, it leads us to see a disclosure which brings an unofficial disclosure, especially by individuals pointed out in this literally,
Let me just jump in, Klaatu, and let me ask you. Let me just cut to the quick here because we've got a break coming up. But let me ask you, what is it going to take? Because you mentioned, you know, this is policy. Well, some might argue that we've had this disclosure policy since Truman, when the whole UFO ET issue, for example, was placed in private hands for, you know, back engineering and development of alien technologies and so forth. So we've had 70 years of this disclosure policy. What's it going to take? Is it going to be the Chinese forcing the U.S.'s hands? What's it going to take for disclosure to happen? Because I don't necessarily think it's ever going to happen. I don't think we even need it to happen at an official level.
Well, this has to come first. According to what I see in this code down through time, I call it, Hoagland leading me, again, behind the surface unofficially. On the surface, he's talking whatever, and he has talked whatever. We'll get into, you know, we won't get into that. What I'm saying is the science and the model of what he said on your show. I'm going to paint that picture, and it's going to prove it. It's going to vindicate his words, to which he will be, how do you say, validated. Vindicated.
Okay, but you've got about 50 seconds. Can you get it done in about 50 seconds?
I have a video called UFO Diaries. Watch that opening line very carefully. It's the model, the solar system scale model, Hoagland's referring to in code. Hoagland in code is NASA. When he says NASA, he's referring to himself. I'm painting it. I'm going to prove it. FacesOfMars.com. I'd really like to be our guest on your show, sir, to talk a couple hours about this, because it will blow you and your audiences away. And in fact, it's what Hoagland really wants. So officially on the surface, he won't admit it. But I'm painting the picture, using his own words, leading the way. This is not a coincidence. Again, based on Brookings. He also told me my voice once was going to be at the head of the wave of the straight disclosure, and that my voice was going to be a huge part in it. And this acclimation program, at the time, I thought it was my radio show. No, he said I had a job for him to do. Well, I've been helping him over the years. I think I see what that job is, because on the surface, he can never admit it to me. On the surface, he has to attack me and attack anyone until, like you said, it's time to when it's allowed, to when the officials can possibly acknowledge it.
So your suggestion here, Klaatu, is that Richard C. Hoagland is being used as part of this controlled disclosure. Is that the idea?
But it has affected my life, not just as an audience.
Well, if it's true, it's going to affect all of our lives, isn't it?
Remember what he said, Richard, about a game changer? I'm the game changer to the game that's exposing and showing his code, where on the surface it destroys him because of his official ties to these things. No one could admit it, but yet he gave us the data years ago, and he's been giving us the data over the years and everything he's saying. I'm seeing the Hoagland I know behind the surface, and that's the one I'm having faith in.
All right, Klaatu, I appreciate the call. Checking in from Fountain, Colorado. Following the River with the Rolling Stones, Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie, Coast to Coast, continues with your calls right after this.